Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Thanks for joining us this evening. I heard that there's more than the usual number of listeners out there, possibly because a lot of you are still trying to recover from the holidays or whatever. But glad to hear that you're out there listening. That's always a great thing. And tonight we're going to be talking about religion and concepts of ageless wisdom. This is your show about metaphysics and spirituality. And who knows what else we'll talk about. If you would like to join me this evening and come in and say hello or just ask a question or make a statement, you can. If you're in the U.S., you can reach us at 877-876-5227. Those of you in Canada, 888-815-9756. I thought I'd start off with this idea that, you know, many people kind of think universally that religion is what spirituality is about. Some others think something different than that, but many people think that. And this show is about spiritual issues and spirituality, which includes, in my opinion, some elements of religion, but not everything in religion is necessarily spiritual, and not everything that is spiritual is necessarily part of a specific religion. Ageless wisdom, though, is something different than what I would consider to be a religion in general. And I want to define these words so that at least I'm conveying what I think about it. And, of course, you don't have to agree with this. Nobody has to agree with anything I'm saying. But nonetheless, I thought I'd define it this way. When we talk about religion, we're really talking about a specific way or ways, usually it's a number of ways, that people can learn about, understand, and worship what they believe to be God, or gods, I guess, in some religions that would be appropriate. And that's what I mean by religion. Specific is the really defining word there. And I'll get into why that's the case in a few minutes. But I want to define it first so that everybody has a pretty good understanding, at least, of what I'm getting at. And when I talk about concepts in ageless wisdom, as well as ageless wisdom in general, I'm not talking about a specific way of defining God or a specific way of defining how to worship God or any of the things that really would be what most people would call religion. So I guess the best explanation of that is that I don't consider ageless wisdom or its concepts to be a religion, at least at this time. That doesn't mean that someone couldn't invent a religion that incorporated most of the paradigms of ageless wisdom and say, well, that's this new religion. But I don't think anybody's quite done that. Now, if we go back in history, there were some religions that were more like ageless wisdom than even the typical ones today. For those of you who are, we'll say, history buffs, you might have heard of a religion called Zoroastrianism. It was a religion that was practiced mostly in Persia. And this specific religion actually resembled some elements of ageless wisdom more than some of the modern religions we have today. Not all of them, but some of them. And for that reason, we could say that it got a little closer, even though it was a long time ago. It was like 2,500, 3,000 years ago. So you're really looking at a different perspective if you go back historically. And you might find some religions that are much further away or much closer to some of the concepts that I'm going to bring into view tonight. But nonetheless, I think it's important to suggest, at least, that one of the things I find that ageless wisdom concepts provide to all religions, if they seek them out and if they incorporate them in some way within the confines of their specifics, is that unlike what most religions do, ageless wisdom teaches and it explains concepts. And it does so in ways that makes these concepts huge. I mean, like big, big, big. You've heard me talk about many of these. And that's something that is missing from most religions. The odd thing about it is that religions help people to understand God, but they do so in a mostly narrow conceptual way. And sometimes there's no concept at all. concept explains why. That's the best way to define it. And if you're not defining it, if you're not explaining why something is the way it is, then you're probably talking about an impartial or incomplete concepts at best, or you're talking about the subject, in this case, God, in mostly what are called examples of God or thought forms. Now, the problem with that is that the larger the concept, the greater the level of understanding or consciousness that is developed through, we'll say, learning and through practicing a specific religion. So what I'm suggesting here, if you followed everything I said, and I hope I'm not going too fast because I am going through this kind of quickly, there's a lot to cover tonight, and that is that basically the advantage, and I consider it an advantage, others might say, oh, it's blasphemy. Well, it's okay. Hey, listen, I can understand that. The advantage of including some of the concepts from ageless wisdom in any religion is that it expands people's concepts and understandings and builds more consciousness in them as they learn and practice the religion. That's a big deal. As a matter of fact, that is such a big deal that I'm going to make a prediction. I always like to be a little bit on the controversial side. What the heck, you know? That within the next, say, half century, the major concepts in ageless wisdom about God will become, we'll say, the norm in many, not all, of the then practiced world religions. I'm saying about 50 years from now, I think that will be true. And you might say, well, where did you get that from? You know, that's just my estimate. Others might have a different opinion. It's just based upon the total experience I've had, the gestalt of all of my experience with the subject. And because of that, that's what I believe is likely to occur. Doesn't mean it's definite. I'm not making a prediction. Don't call me, you know, Niles Nostradamus or something like that. You know, I'm just putting it out there for some people to think about. Now, it's also probably going to cause some difficulties and crises, but it will resolve as many as it causes. The ones that it will cause will be about doctrines that are very specific and that have virtually no concept in them. Those doctrines are going to be in the most conflict with we'll call it philosophy, if you want to like that word instead of religion, because it's not really religion, of ageless wisdom concepts, because if something is very narrow, very limited, and you have this huge series of concepts that it's up next to, obviously there's not going to be a lot of give and take. There's not going to be a lot of we'll call it commonality. And those on one side may be radically opposed to those on the other. However, this is the interesting thing, and I write this in the preface of Life's Hidden Meaning, the textbook I wrote. And that is that even though there may be that level of disagreement, the odd thing about it is that although the religion may have a very negative and even violent reaction, the concepts in ageless wisdom don't. So the people on the conceptual, larger conceptual side will have much less polarization in their behaviors and thoughts in comparison to those who are on the more narrow side, who are likely to have maybe even, who knows, what kind of high revolting kind of reaction. So we have a significant difference in the way this whole thing is going to work out. And the reason for that is that those that are on the large concept side, they're still going to be in the religions. Now, I'm not saying they're outside of it. They will be more open and inclusive to the idea that people could be different. They will be more used to the idea that God doesn't have to be specific. And here's a very interesting point. Although some people might still choose to prefer a God that is more personal, I call it, more specific, they may also recognize that it doesn't have to be that way, And it doesn't, there's not a need for all people to adopt that perspective. Whereas the people who are more narrow and don't want anything to do with the bigger concepts may still have that, and even a more extreme reaction than that in the future, and some people today still do as well. So what I'm talking about, the future, it could still obviously be present in today's world. However, because ageless wisdom has really been not adopted much in religion, at least not that much, it hasn't really been a great odds, or hasn't been a head-butting kind of thing very often about the two issues. That doesn't mean it hasn't happened by any stretch. I'm just saying it's more likely in the future we'll see this. And again, we're talking 50 years maybe before this really all comes to fruition. Some of it may happen in various locales earlier, and some may come much later. Okay. So what else do I want to define and explain about the way people perceive and respond to religion? Let's talk about awareness and perception itself. Those of us who tend to focus more through what is called the solar plexus chakra, particularly in our astral body, this is getting into that metaphysical stuff again. Yes, that's right. That's probably what part of the show is about. I know. Those who focus more that way interpret God using their heart chakra, which is an understanding of God itself. That's the perception, direct perception of God, as humans can do, because we have consciousness with our heart chakra, where animals don't. For the most part, that's true. And so we naturally have some awareness of our own creator, God, whereas most animals, unless they're close pets and have had a lot of, and they are more advanced animals, most animals just don't have anything like that. They may have a heart chakra, but they don't have one that has any consciousness sphere connected to it that leads to a self-awareness of the perception. So you can't ponder on the feeling that you have about God. You can just respond to it by loving something or not, but you can't say, aha, I understand God because I have the chakra that gives it to me. But the people who are more into the narrow spectrum, into the areas where they're led by strong, more non-conceptual or not fully conceptual religious beliefs, those people usually interpret this sensation of God that comes through their heart chakra by processing it more often on a conscious level, not directly through the heart chakra, because their heart chakra consciousness is limited. It's barely spinning. It's barely moving. It's not, there isn't a lot going on there. And that's because they haven't maybe developed it as much in this lifetime and maybe in a number of other lifetimes before. Because they may not believe in other lifetimes as well. And so they tend to process it through their solar plexus center, and this is especially true in the astral body, because in the astral body, these two chakras are called feminine or even ray chakras, and the solar plexus chakra is in the same vibrational phase, or close to it, as the astral plane is itself. So the astral elements become very prominent in people who focus through the solar plexus chakra and any of their bodies, because it vibrates strong in their astral body. Even while they're physically alive, this is a true statement. Certainly when they become astral alive, it becomes even more true. So what does it all mean? Well, it means that those people are perceiving God the way their solar plexus chakra has perception in general, and that's through closeness. It's touch, actually, and they need to literally touch their creator. And you might say, well, how could they do that? I mean, you know, especially if they don't have a high concept level, how are they going to go touch God? Well, the answer to this is really fascinating, at least it is to me anyway. And that is that they're likely to sense their creator through experiences with others that, it, as a collective group, build this sensation of God in something we call a congregation or larger group of people who together perceive what little or what amount of concepts they have along with a lot of examples or thought forms about their creator. And that's what traditional religions these days does. I mean, that's it provides this vehicle, this source for people to use this particular center over their heart chakra more so. And it does so by this very closeness, and the examples give them some additional level of closeness to their creator. Each example, they can relate to something in their life. It puts it down to a very concrete level, and they can perceive some of these issues on a daily basis, maybe by doing things that give to people on a very personal level, or that people give to them on a very personal level, and it reminds them of God. You might say, well, what about the people who don't have that? What about the people who perceive their creator mostly through their heart and crown chakra, which is the two senses that were developed, if they are fully conscious or partially conscious at least, to really perceive our creator? What happens to those people? And there we have a difference, because there, those people, instead of trying to perceive God personally and as someone so close to them they can touch God and are felt being touched by God, they don't seek to be touched by God. They don't even perceive it if it even were to happen. Rather, what they perceive is themselves reaching out and being creative, co-creative with God, and being an expression of God itself, and seeing others as the same. Sometimes we'll call it being soul conscious, because they see others as being this expansive creative being that seeks to create more of God rather than to experience on a personal level God. So they're seeking something different because they're perceiving their world different. Now, we got to be realistic about this. For all you who are listening, you're probably going to say, oh, this guy is prejudiced. I'm not prejudiced. I'm just talking about the way I see things. And you could say that it's not necessarily the picture that everybody else might like, but that's the way I see it. And that is that with what I just suggested is the possible ways that people are perceiving God. And obviously, a lot of elements come into play here. These are two wide categories of which there's enormous differences from one person to another, because there's all this individuality about them. But there's, we're talking about generalities here. And so what we find, at least what I find, as a, we'll call it a added understanding from what I just explained, is that as people gain this process, they really are growing away from most of the more formalized religions. They actually are in vastly so the minority. And the vast majority at the present time are those that don't perceive God in such a wide, strong way. And then there are the atheists and agnostics who also have a other viewpoint. But I'll get to that in a minute. I think it's really interesting when we look at this process. What I see is happening is really an amazing thing. Human beings can be classified by the seven chakras in three bodies that they mostly use their senses to, more from that perspective in terms of religion and many other aspects of life than just about anything else. I mean, it isn't like we are just mechanical lined up instruments that will just do whatever the chakras are perceiving. But if you look at perception, if you look at awareness, it's so strongly affects us, particularly while we're in the more dense parts of the universe, like right here. This is the densest, the physical part. And it's so, it is such a strong thing that we could say that if you just knew how people were sensing things, and we can do that, actually, in Ageless Wisdom again, then it's possible to literally chart one's perception to how they are going to respond to their creator with a fairly high consistency of accuracy between the two, not always going to be the case. I mean, there's going to be exceptions, but fairly often that will be the result. Wow. It's really something to think about. So I'm also saying in 50 years, people's perception, their awareness, will change from a more personal dynamic to a more soul dynamic as they move, especially in the religious sense, from the sixth ray element, which is the solar plexus part, which is very one-directional, very narrow, to the second ray element, and a little bit more towards the first ray element, which will be very expansive, bigger concepts, and co-creative rather than a recipient of the grace of and the protection of and the explanation of everything of a creator who makes everything work and happen. So this is good, and also I would say responsibility becomes interestingly subordinate to God in a six-ray personal viewpoint, whereas responsibility becomes co-responsible and not subordinate to God in the other side. Rather than saying one is subordinate in their responsibilities, they are probably prominent and even preeminent. A lot of people say, oh, that's really blasphemous. No. What I'm saying is that the Creator is so much bigger than our more narrow concepts that this Creator loves us and seeks us to grow by non-interference most of the time, and certainly by not preempting our choices so that we are narrowed in the ways that we express ourselves and allows us to find it rather than forces us to. An interesting viewpoint, one that not everybody's going to agree with, of course. Okay, so I hope I haven't bored you all. I'm trying to explain this relatively slowly. I want to talk about the difference in the ray focus from another standpoint. The sixth ray, which is so critical, is no longer in focus on our planet. And it's waning. It's been waning for a long time. It really went out of focus around the turn of the century before this century. So we're talking about the 19th and 20th centuries is when the sixth ray ceased to be in focus. So the solar plexus center is not as strongly developing as it was for hundreds of years, since 1675 to be exact. Before 1675 AD. So what we're really saying here is that there's been a pretty big shift in the world, starting with around the turn of the 20th century, and it has been more difficult for people to perceive God through, we'll say, the structured, the typical, the larger represented religion. After that time. And if you think about it historically, there's some evidence to support that. And then in addition to that, the second ray has continued in focus. So we're continuing to expand the larger viewpoint of God, of our Creator, but narrowing and reducing our ability to perceive God on a personal scale, which means that the toll is being taken on organized religions. How is this toll being taken? Well, the organized religions are becoming disorganized. And that's a terrible thing in reality. You might say, what's so bad about that? Hey, you're saying, is it better to have the substitute of the second ray for the sixth anyway? Wouldn't that make it better? Well, in the long run, I'll go along with that. But in the short run, we have plain havoc. And the havoc is that as people cannot perceive what organized religion is telling them about their Creator, they lose some of their perspective about God entirely, and they have two general reactions. And this is not going to surprise you after I tell you what they are. The first general reaction of the larger group is they become less involved in the organized religions. They become less concerned about having the personal contact with God. And they move away from that. Some of them become more atheistic. Some of them become more agnostic, doubting that there is a God, but not sure. The atheists say there is no God. That we have that going on. Okay. But then we have another reaction, which is even worse. Because after a while, as the waning takes place in our perceptions, there are those in society that substitute, instead of God, their own desires and their needs for either control or power or emotional, we'll say, satisfaction about who they are or what they are as being the right thing. And they become terrorists, and they become radicals, and they become some of the most extremes. And sometimes, before that, they just become the most ardent, but tyrannically ardent, supporters of certain elements of some religions before they get to the other, to the far extreme. And so this is the problem. The polarization that we see in many religions is caused by the lack of perception coming from the personal God that people are used to perceiving with their solar plexus center, especially the astral solar plexus center. And this is causing these issues that we are faced with today. I bet you didn't know that, because that's something that I don't think a lot of people do know. And you might say, whoa, so that explains what's going on if you look in history. Yes, there's no question there was still radicalism and other issues, even while the sixth ray was focused in. But it's gotten much worse because of polarization. You might say, well, what about the people who left with these organized religions and aren't so involved? Isn't that less polarization? Well, maybe. But I don't consider atheism or someone who is agnostic as a better place to be. And the reason for that is that the rejection of one's creator, these were more open to being possessed and more likely to being egotistical and arrogant. And that's a big problem these days, bigger than it was 100 or 200 years ago. So egotism and arrogance seems to accompany the rejection of God, because it distorts the lower part of the mental mind. And without the examples of God there to at least mitigate one's own superpowers and super beliefs in oneself, we start believing that God is not needed. We are the supreme beings of everything. And the rest of everything is just a folk tale, and nobody who's sensible should ever believe that kind of stuff. I want you to think about that. Whoa, that was a lot, wasn't it? We started, I thought, in a safe place, and we've gone pretty upstream here, aren't we? Okay, that's all right. I don't mind that. I hope you don't either. Because, controversy, that's all right. We can be somewhat controversial. I'm trying to explain how these issues are really coming to bear on our society today. I hope you see that this is really more pragmatic than it may have seemed at the first few minutes of the show. Okay, so we're going to be back in, give or take, about 2.5 minutes. And when we come back, I'll continue this and go even deeper into some elements that I'm really interested in talking about. Be back in about that much time.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel.
Kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is, and hopefully you're going to hear more about religion and concepts of ageless wisdom. My name is Niles McFlower, and hopefully also this next part isn't going to really, really turn on all the red lights and problems, because I am going to talk about specifics now of concepts of ageless wisdom and how they relate to some religions. Whew. Okay, I know. That's probably going to raise some dander in some people, and it's probably going to get them upset. But that's all right, because I think that that's where our audience would like the show to be. I could be wrong, and if you think I am, you certainly can call. Now, here we go. Let's talk about some of the most basic concepts of ageless wisdom. Those of you who have been reading Life and Meaning, I think if you've gotten through Chapter 2 at least, you probably already have some idea of what I'm going to be talking about. And that is that, first of all, God, the big God, the God of everything, of our universe, is a God of seven dimensions of time and space. And what we think of our universe is only the first of seven. That's it. I know there's three dimensions, height, width, and depth. But those three, actually, when you get to the very integration of the whole dimension, is only one. Even physics, modern day physics, would somewhat support that statement. So it's an important issue here to realize that we're talking about a huge, huge being. And I say it is a being. It's not, God is not a machine. It's not a computer in the sky. God is a being, but it's not a human being. As a matter of fact, God is as far away from human beings as we are from the most simplest element, and maybe even a subatomic particle. That's how far God is from us in consciousness. Now, that's an important element. You might say, well, how do I know that? Well, there's a very complicated, and that's why you kind of need to read some things in ageless wisdom, but there's a very complicated system of thought, which, kind of making it simplified, goes something like this. And if you're going to create a universe as complex and huge, way bigger than the dimension we live in, just think how big our dimension is, just incredible, right? 13.5 to 14 billion light years in dimension. It's beyond our comprehension. And it's growing, so it's going to be bigger than that. So ultimately, and it has billions, you know, hundreds and hundreds of billions of galaxies with hundreds and hundreds of billions of stars. I mean, just it's beyond all of our imaginations. So in order to create something like that, that is supposed to be designed to be an addition to your own consciousness, an addition to your own growth through life. Life is the growth of yourself, but you choose to have something disconnected from yourself. So it can be free to choose to co-participate eventually when it becomes humans and beyond. And that's why we are like the bottom of the rung from which we can grow, because we have direct awareness of our Creator. And as I stated earlier, those things that are less than human do not. Okay, so here we have this awareness and the consciousness that goes with it, and the Creator wants this, but But in order to, for it to have existed, it had to have come from an infinite realm of possibilities, and on its own, using its own thought, have limited part of that infinite realm to become something more, which I call it a creator, and that creator created a universe, us, and then chose all these other things that I said so far and a lot more. And so it did all this from an infinite field of possibilities. And that means it's one heck of a big being we're talking about. And it's self-created, so guess what it wants us to be? Self-created. You see, it created itself, and it wants everything else to have the same opportunity. And it gives us that opportunity by increasing its existence of mind by zillions and zillions of times. Rather than seeking to be all that is, it seeks to be one of zillions and zillions, because it knows the act of creation is the greatest, most wonderful thing, especially when it's creation so that others can do the same. Wow. This is the God of Ageless Wisdom. It's so big, it's so huge, that it makes almost any kind of definable element of any of the organized known religions that I'm familiar with, maybe you can tell me some that I'm not familiar with, which might challenge this idea, look very, very small. And that's, you know, and that's not, I'm not saying that to be disparaging. I'm just saying it as a comparison. I mean, saying, okay, here are the two concepts. One, you got this whole super being, you know, thing. And the other one is God is blank, blank. And so you got the blank, blank, but the blank, blank of God is usually an example of a relatively small, if any, concept. If any. And sometimes none. This becomes a great, interesting scenario. You say, you might say, well, what about the monotheistic, you know, not the monotheistic, the multiple theistic, where you get all these polytheistical things going on, and you got 10 different gods that are doing this, or, you know, because, you know, we still have some of that today. There's Hindus and other people who have various slants on different parts of God being manifested in different ways. Well, interestingly, that Ageless Wisdom does not prevent that. It's just when you get to the whole big picture, that's when the differences fall by their wayside. Does that mean that you have to have one big God, even if you have minor, smaller ones? Ultimately, yes. Now, I know you respectively say no. No, you do, because for something to create the entire universe is such an enormous effort in creation, that if that being was, if you had like a group of beings trying to put it all together, it would be most difficult to explain how the genesis, the progenesis of the very first of them got to be. You have to start from this infinite field of possibilities to even get something that would be that large. And that's why it's important probably to read more about this, and I'm explaining on tonight's show, because this is so deep. And there's a lot of nuances about it, so you could debate. I mean, this is potentially a debatable subject, but I think that the weight of the argument goes towards there being one being ultimately, not a whole bunch of them. But from that one being comes many, and that one being is not the only one being. This is a strange thing, but it is as far as our universe is concerned. You could have zillions of one-being gods that are making universes themselves, you see. But if you're going to make one universe, that's how it separates out into the one being, as far as I can understand it. And I certainly am open to being wrong about this idea. Okay, so nonetheless, if we're comparing, and that's what I'm doing right now, this to organized religions, we can see where it gets to be rather... It's almost an unfair advantage, you might say, because the advantage of Ageless Wisdom concepts, when you bring, if you could bring them into religions, or if you do decide to do that, is that it frees us up to seeing ourselves expanding to great, vastly greater levels, since we're created in our creator's image, truly. just as some religions say, and we have the opportunity to become much greater than a human being, way, way more than human beings. Most religions don't give you that option. Not really. They give you a very limited option of growth. And if you think about that, that's not really very good. Now, what about reincarnation? That's part of ageless wisdom, right? Well, reincarnation is the reincarnation from a soul's level. That doesn't mean that personalities, us as we personally are going to come back exactly as we have been. We aren't really like we are right now anyway. We are very much like our souls, except that in this reality, we are so illusioned, we act like imbeciles. Because the illusions cut down our perception and cause us to make enormous mistakes about everything we think about and everything we behave in. And we do terrible things to each other, to ourselves, you name it. We got it. Okay, so this is the important point. Reincarnation allows us to expand our thought. The concept itself frees us to become something much greater because it isn't just one life. If we only got this one life, oh boy, are we in trouble. Most people are turkeys. So what, we're going to go to heaven and be turkeys or go to hell and be turkeys? I don't know what good that's going to do. I mean, you're still going to be pretty much a turkey wherever you go if this is all you're going to be. I don't care how good you live this life. Human beings are a mess. We're a mess from the day we're born, and we seldom get that much better the day we die. We do grow some, but it's not enough to really get us very far in terms of this super universe we're talking about. And we're nowhere near what ageless wisdom does in conceptual framework in defining a soul. We're so far from being our own soul, which we came from, that we have to go and live two more lifetimes in the astral and then the lower mental world just to relearn what it's like to be a soul so we can rejoin our soul in consciousness because that's what we came from. We're a piece of it. And we got to grow ourselves back into it because it can't be bestowed upon us. We have to actually, everything is self-created, remember? God said, go off and be self-created, so we got to do it. If we destroy ourselves like we're doing while we're physically alive, then we've got to remake ourselves as we go back to being our souls. You might say, well, why come here in the first place? Well, because we're co-creators of our Creator, and if we don't come here, if we don't do this really difficult process, there will be almost nothing created of God in this part, this dimension of time and space of the universe, where it is most difficult to live and create, because humans are the critical factor. We have the sense, at least, of our Creator. What, do you think all the mice are going to create God in this? We're going to bug off and all go to a higher dimension and leave the mice to take over. That isn't going to work. And they might get more enlightened. Honestly, if we did do that, the mice actually, through a thing called evolutionary development, might actually develop more. But they aren't going to develop the senses of a human being because by nature, they are not humans. And they won't evolve into humans. They'll evolve into better and better mice. Now, you might disbelieve that, especially if you're an atheist. And you might say, well, why not? The mice are just going to become another type of human being. No, that won't happen because they don't have an individual soul. But that's how we get into the differences between ageless wisdom and pure, we'll call it the level of pure science at the present time. Ageless wisdom certainly includes science and explains why science doesn't work in some cases and how it works in others. Nonetheless, it's metaphysics is what it is. Going beyond physics. It goes beyond the sciences as we understand it. And so, yeah, the mice will get better. The mice will get smarter. The mice will develop the senses they have to enormous levels, but they still won't become human. They won't. And if you're really going to eliminate all humans, they can become human. If you're going to say, I'm not going to have any human beings, let's see why can't we just have a godly universe, at least the part we're in, run by mice? It won't work. Because in order to co-create with your Creator at the level that is necessary to keep the entire system going, including the mice, we need humans. Yeah, we are the strangest thing about this is that we are sorely needed, but we're also the the terrible albatross around the neck of the entire rest of the life system. We destroy life, but we also enhance it. We bring it in as part of our own civilization or civilizations, and over time, if we develop that part, those parts of life also develop. If we develop in goodness and in the light of our Creator, then those parts do as well. Of course, if we do the opposite, no more mice, no more anything. Everything will disappear. Okay, so we're needed. We are, in a very big way, we are needed. But we are needed also to get over our illusions. And that takes many, many lifetimes. Because we keep that which is good, and we live out and rework through that which is not good and incomplete, because the causes are not connected to the effects, and that's the thing called karma. We have to come back and fix those things that we didn't get right in the first place. It doesn't mean that you relive everything in exact fashion. You relive the concepts, not the examples. And you come back in many, many different lifetimes, but not as the same person. Because if you came back as the same person, the chances are you would repeat each lifetime. So we choose, while particularly we're in the mental world, before we join with our soul, much of what our next life is going to be like. And our soul is doing the same thing. And then when we rejoin our soul, we have a pretty good idea. And we choose what our new personality is going to be like, in conjunction with all those others that we think we'll have some relationship to. That's how it works. Now, you might say, but I never heard of that in my religion. And I'm a Buddhist, and I didn't hear of it. Some Buddhists don't completely comprehend that, even though they do believe in reincarnation. And if you say, well, I'm not a Buddhist, I'm a Muslim, or I'm a Christian, or a Jew, then you might have even more trouble with this, because your religions don't necessarily support the idea of continual growth. They are more limited in their concepts about how we can grow. They're more limited in our relationship to our Creator. You notice in those bigger religions, you tend to have a much more personal relationship with the Creator, and many people enjoy that and like that. But you lose the big picture. And the big picture means you can't get any bigger than the smallest element of how you're allowed to grow. Not the biggest element, but the smallest. That becomes your anchor. That becomes your albatross. If you can't get any bigger, then I'll be very specific. Now, some people are going to get upset with this. Don't get too upset. But if you can't be any bigger, then as Jesus Christ was, as written in three or four testaments in a book they call the Bible, which was rewritten several times in different ways, if you can't get any bigger than that, you got a problem. You got a big problem. So you got to think about this in terms of, gee, what is the concept of God that I want to become? Now, does that mean does that now degrade Jesus Christ? No. I'm just talking about maybe we don't understand Jesus Christ. And maybe Jesus Christ said something different, like, you will do things even greater than I am. Did Jesus Christ say that? Why don't you look in those testaments and see if Jesus Christ said that? So, I mean, according to the testaments. So I think the important thing here is for us all to be concerned about the size of the concepts, how they could fit into our religions, how we may want to change some of our ways of perceiving God so that we free ourselves to become greater co-creators. So that we can do more good, not less. I'm not telling you, hey, just go on and chill out because, you know, now you really got the message from me about God and you don't have to worry about it. I'm saying the exact opposite. The more you understand, the more you're responsible to co-create with God. Isn't that what I said at the beginning of the show? That's your responsibility. And those you don't understand aren't going to take on that responsibility as much. So I want people to take on the responsibility because that's what's going to make our world a better place. Whoa. Okay. And I hope I haven't freaked out too many people with everything I'm saying. So now when we compare the concepts of ageless wisdom with religion, we start seeing that ageless wisdom is like this huge big thing. It may not be a religion, but it could add so much to religions, and maybe someday it will become a religion of something. I don't know. You know, some of them might take all the concepts, oh, we'll make a religion out of it. But it would be a different kind of religion than anything that we know of today, because it would be ageless. It would keep growing and changing. Notice I don't use the word ancient. Some people call ageless wisdom ancient wisdom. That, to me, is something that's never going to grow. It's just the past, and let's just keep it the way it was. Well, that's not what I'm talking about. So the very concept of ageless wisdom in itself is that it constantly is changing and growing, creating larger truths for those that think mentally, and producing some types of changes that are not always the most comfortable, but are the most productive in increasing life and increasing the growth of God. That's the bottom line. How much does it grow God is the biggest question most people can ask themselves in anything that they're doing in terms of religion or other elements of their life. How much is this growing God? Ask yourself that on a regular basis, and your life will change. That's a suggestion. Okay, I got about another minute here, and then I got to kind of switch gears. So let me just kind of say this. If this show has caused you any kind of like, oh, I don't know, this guy's beginning to get me upset a little bit, sit and think about it. If you want to contact me, I'm available. You can call and go to agelesswisdom.com. There's ways to get a hold of me. If you want to yell at me, write me nasty things, that's okay. I don't mind, really. I'd rather have a nice dialogue, but if you just want to say, oh, how dare you degrade what I think and feel, you know, that's okay. I understand. But think about everything that I said today and how that might affect an improvement in yourself in the way that you relate to your own religion. And how can you bring this in so that you can increase your experience of God while you also increase your co-creation with God and you do more good in the world? That would be a very good thing to consider. And while you're considering that, let me make a couple of other announcements here. If you have a chance, please listen in this coming Sunday at 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're in the Boston, Norfolk, Providence, Rhode Island area, just tune in to 1170 a.m. and I'll be there, as they say. If you can't be in that area or you don't want to tune in on your radio, you can listen to me on the internet at WDISAM.com. And that would be great. I would love for you to do that. You can call in just like you can on this show if you want. You can listen. It's a live broadcast. That's always, I think, the better way to do it. And if you're in a different time zone, then adjust your time zone because it's 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay. Also, if you happen to be in the neighborhood on Monday, January 5th, that's coming up, and you're around the Phoenix metropolitan area on the west side of town in Glendale, the northwest side, you can go to Borders Books and Music from 7 to 8:15 p.m. and hear Mimi talk. She's a member of the spiritual group that I'm a member of. And listen to The Science of Relationships. She's going to talk about that. There's no charge. Just come and be there with her. Enjoy the evening. I probably will not be there this week, but you can attend, and I hope that you do choose to do that. Okay, we've got about a minute here or so, give or take. So let me just mention this to you. If you have the opportunity and you want to take it, you can get licensed meaning and read more about this, or you can talk to me. If you think that I'm wrong, that's okay. Just go on practicing whatever you're practicing, because it's better to sense God even personally than it is to not sense God at all. I think if you're an atheist, you're cutting yourself short. It's going to be much more difficult to create a life of co-service. You can do it, but it's going to be much more difficult. Why make things hard? It's when it's so much easier, and there's many things you can do about it. Okay, well, I'm out of time for right now. Hopefully this show has made some difference for all of our listeners. It certainly has for me. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.